see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Hey, it's Mel Robbins, host of the Mel Robbins Podcast. I don't want you to miss out on the life you could be living. I mean, just imagine how different your life would be if you had the tools to go from thinking about what you wanted to actually taking action and making it happen. Well, this is your chance to find out how different your life could be. I just created a free training that has over 2 hours of premium video curriculum. It even comes with a companion workbook that is 29 pages long. Do not let another year of your life go by wishing things were different. Go to melrobbins.com/make it happen and allow me to help you make it different.
Fire. Thanks. I don't need help. Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows, and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of Love to See It.
We have so much gossip to discuss.
Have you guys heard about this?
Oh my God. This episode is going to be a veritable bonanza of gossip. I could hardly keep up with it during Thanksgiving. I kept texting Claire at inappropriate times. I was supposed to be with my family. And yet, Katie Thurston just like reeled me in.
I was literally, because I had a very exciting sick toddler themed Thanksgiving in the parking lot of an urgent care on Thanksgiving, texting back about Katie Thurston. I was like, this is more important than being inside right now.
I know. It was honestly rude of her to drop the final 12 days of messy post while I was driving to D.C. Apparently, you're not supposed to text and drive on the highway at the same time. I hear it's dangerous, and that's an affront to me.
They've had some public service announcement campaigns about that.
Yes.
And laws. yeah, I mean, last time we did a gossip episode, I was just like, let's get some random Dumois garbage in here, like a hint of this, a bit of that. We only have time today for two blockbuster news items. Tayshia and Zach breaking up last Monday on November 22nd. And Katie Thurston ending her 12 days of messy Taylor Swift themed Instagram story event about the men from her season by announcing that she is now dating one of the guys she sent home week two, John Hersey, who has since become a very close friend of hers.
Wild shit. And there are so many little sub bullets to each of these stories. So we're going to try to work our way through. There have been like other little nuggets of gossip, but frankly, we had to just focus this time. So I think we're gonna start with the less fun news item, which is Tayshia and Zach's breakup.
Yeah, not as juicy. Doesn't feel as good in a way to
gossip about,
poke fun and gossip about something that doesn't seem so deliberately geared for attention as Katie's 12 days of messy. It doesn't seem like Tayshia and Zach wanted any attention around this really at all, but they were a very public couple and their breakup was sudden, and it happened right after they had just done something very public as a couple for the first time in a while, which was run the New York City Marathon together, which was a Bachelor star-studded event. They ran the whole race together. They crossed the finish line together.
There were a whole bunch of really cute photos of them supporting each other through the race, kissing throughout the race. Zach posted a really mushy, you know, Instagram talking about Tayshia and her dedication. And then basically immediately after, they broke up. So it felt to the public a little bit like whiplash.
Yeah. Let's try to get into the timeline here. So the breakup was confirmed on Monday, November 22nd, which is the Monday of Thanksgiving week. They had gotten engaged a little less than a year before at the end of Tayshia's season last year. And I just want to call out here, this means that within the last, like, essentially 2 months, all three of the bachelorettes from the last year have broken up with their final choices. Ugh. Like, all at once.
I hate it.
Anti-cuffing season. They're like, I want to be single and ready to mingle during COVID surge winter.
Look, I respect, I hope that all of them thrive, especially Claire and Tayshia, honestly.
I think often women thrive when they can be alone during the winter months and really not have to take care of a man, you know?
It's a lot of emotional labor.
Snuggled up with your tea and not having to worry about keeping a man going. So they had run the marathon together. That's like the first weekend of November. So the breakup was around 3 weeks. A little less than 3 weeks after the marathon, right?
Yeah, and right before the official announcement came down that they had ended their engagement, there was a report that they were, quote, on a break, which was very much writings on the wall.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, the report will come out in, like, Us Weekly or whatever, like, a source says they're on a break, and no one wants to believe it. You know, we're all like, oh, well, you know, these tabloids, they'll just say anything. But actually, there ends up being a breakup announcement.
Yeah, so that initial announcement, I believe, was on November 19th. So they didn't wait long to make the official breakup confirmation.
Yeah. And after the marathon, you know, Tayshia has been very busy with her various hosting obligations, this and that. And they had spoken about how training together had been a way for them to spend time together and how they were planning to spend some time relaxing in New York City together after this marathon. The next thing that happened is about a week after the marathon, Tayshia was hospitalized with what turned out to be a kidney infection.
Which she has said publicly was not connected to the marathon.
Yeah, there was a lot of speculation when she was hospitalized that it was because Zach had pushed her too hard in the marathon, that it was too much for her body, that now she was suffering from, you know, overextending herself with insufficient training. And she later clarified that it was not marathon related. But we didn't really see, I remember sort of looking to see if Zach would be posting about her in the hospital or, you know, if we would be hearing from Tayshia with some details like, oh, Zach's been here supporting me. That didn't really come. And that's when I actually started to feel a little nervous. I was like, they've been really publicly doing this marathon together. Why is their relationship now absent from Tayshia being hospitalized?
Yeah, it was definitely very odd. And ultimately, from the timeline that ends up coming out, it seems like that's right around the time that the split was happening.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of how exactly it happened, I mean, there's so much, you know, speculation, obviously, like, oh, they broke up because he wasn't supportive when she was sick or something. Like, we have no idea whether it was related or not to the marathon or to her illness. But for her to run a marathon, break up with her fiance, and get a terrible kidney infection in the space of essentially like 1 week.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Let Tayshia rest.
Let Tayshia rest. Let Jesse Palmer just take over the hosting obligations. What a kindness to her. Let her rest. Yeah, so she clearly was having a difficult November. And, you know, so what happened, I guess? Like, what happened to Tayshia and Zach? We're the kind of people who tend to get on board with bachelor couples. You know, if they choose someone, we want them to be happy. I don't get a lot of pleasure out of looking at a couple that is trying to make it work and being like, LOL, who do they think they're kidding? They're such a terrible match. And I liked them as a couple from what I saw on the show. I wanted it to work out.
Me too.
And so it was not something that I was like avidly awaiting the news of every week, you know, or that I was theorizing about all year.
I always feel sad when public couples break up. Like, I don't necessarily want to be deluged with couple content all the time, but I like to sometimes just imagine people I've watched on reality TV like floating away in the ether just happily.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that what people most struggle with on some level with celebrity breakups is not even that they want the couple to stay together per se. It's that, oh, all that time I thought you were like happy and you weren't. You were fighting, and that's a bummer. I wish that your life had been full of more happiness and security during this time when I assumed it was. And I had hoped that, you know, Tayshia was in a really supportive relationship during a very busy professional year. But it seems like things were not actually working. And so why not? I mean, they obviously have very different
lives.
I mean, one of the things that we liked about Zach is that he's not from an influencer background, though he certainly does influence now. He posts plenty of ads for like fitness wear and stuff. But he does his work with the Drug Addiction Foundation that he works with. And he does love to marathon for a cause. This was like his 8th marathon. And he loves New York. And Tayshia has been out in California a lot. She's been getting into hosting and sort of building a kind of career that is more compatible with like living in LA. And
that's just a hard thing.
That kind of entertainment journalism lifestyle. And yeah.
And frankly, wanting, you know, having divergent career paths or desiring to live in different places, like these are reasons that lots of relationships might come to an end. You know, if two people don't have a compatible vision of the future, often it doesn't work out.
Yeah. And they had spent a lot of time apart already. Like in August, I think she went on Ben and Ashley I's podcast, the Almost Famous podcast. She had at that point in August just filmed essentially 2 back-to-back seasons of The Bachelorette, like on location. And she said something that maybe was a hint that things were not all rainbows and ponies. She said, I think that after that, it was kind of like we need to remember why we were with each other. And I think that's absolutely normal. It's hard to be in a new relationship and then kind of go away for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? And this is me being real and honest. And I think that's true, but also, you know, if you are spending a lot of time focused on other things and being in other places and your relationship can't handle that, you know,
maybe it's not the right relationship.
Maybe it's not the right relationship. You know, like if it's difficult, because I think this is part of the reason that breakups can hurt to see is because you think, well, yeah, sometimes I feel like my partner and I need to remember why we're together. And like that is absolutely normal. And then when the couple breaks up 2 weeks later or a month later, you're like, is it absolutely normal? Like, should I be worried?
Exactly. It's like we want everyone around us to be nice and stable because it almost reinforces our own stability. Like I like to imagine, like, don't upset the equilibrium, famous couples. Just like, yeah, have a nice time.
Exactly. I need you to demonstrate that it is totally normal and fine to sometimes struggle and to forget why you're together and and to have to struggle to reestablish that.
It's hard to know what happened between two people unless first of all you are intimately involved in those people's lives, and especially if they are a public figure and they haven't come out and stated something, you know, equivocally.
Yeah. No, we don't know much about, and that's I think another thing that allowed them to be sort of a more beloved Bachelor Nation couple than certain others is that they weren't seen in public a lot together. They didn't seem to be trying
courting
to be couple,
that attention.
A couple influence, a power couple, influencer couple. Yeah, it made you think like, oh, maybe they have like a nice, normal, off-camera type relationship. And maybe that's true, but because it's off-camera, there isn't much for us to evaluate. And I was sad. I thought Zach always seemed so lovely, kind of out of the Bachelorette winner norm. Like, he didn't seem like that, like, smooth, both in terms of body waxing and also pickup line having the most like muscle bound future influencer that the lead could possibly
He's
find.
Not
like,
the normal type that you see going on this show, and certainly not the typical type that tends to have great success. And that's always appealing.
Yes. However, as I was researching this episode, I did find
some red flags that concerned me.
Yeah. And one of the things that concerned me the most is that apparently Zach is a Barstool fan.
Real red flag.
That is like extremely not okay with me.
I agree. Unfortunately, that's pretty. That is something that brings him closer to the typical Bachelor type, because there is a real intermingling of the Barstool world and Bachelor world.
Yeah. And that's like, it seems insane to say that enjoying sports content from a specific media company is a deal breaker, but like, it's pretty close to being a deal breaker for me. Like, if I found out that Greg had a private room of Barstool paraphernalia, I would be like, this is like Bluebeard's chamber. Like, we're done.
I mean, and the main reason that we can say that is because Barstool is so tied to the cult of personality that surrounds its founder, Dave Portnoy, who's just a real piece of shit.
Yeah. And like, he defines the culture of Barstool. He defines the way that the tone of the content, he defines the way that they interact with public criticism, with their audience. I should note that the way that the kind of confirmation that Zach is a stoolie is two parts. One is that he was apparently wearing a Barstool hoodie in an Instagram photo before the marathon. And the other is that is related to Dave Portnoy more directly. A few weeks ago, Dave Portnoy was the subject of a very long and damning investigative article in Insider about his proclivity for targeting very young women, like recent high school graduates, for sex, often sex that they found coercive and violent. The report, which I urge everyone to read if they haven't, is really disturbing.
If you have the stomach for it, it's very disturbing.
And we should, you know, say here that he has denied that he did anything wrong. And not only has he denied that he did anything wrong, he has been going on the offensive against Insider and the journalist in question, posting a lot of attacks on them, inciting harassment against them by his followers. And amid this flood of posts defending himself and attacking Insider, he put up an Instagram post defending specifically something, the Barstool Fund, a fund he created to help small businesses survive COVID. And he's like, I really did this to help small businesses survive COVID. It's not a PR move. Like, insider may claim, like it's all, I'm so passionate about helping small businesses survive COVID. And Zach commented on this post, keep going. So you could look at this specific post and maybe say like, yeah, keep going, keep helping small businesses survive COVID. But like, it's clear that, you know, Zach is engaged with Dave Portnoy as a follower. And this is amidst Dave Portnoy flailing around defending himself.
Like,
from,
one would think maybe this isn't the time to be encouraging of Dave Portnoy. Like, even if you secretly enjoy him, you know what I mean? Like, it just tactically seems stupid. All that being said, it's not a good look for Zach, and it raises a red flag or three.
And obviously we don't know Zach, but did this give me a big frowny face when I saw it?
Yes, definitely.
It definitely did.
The other thing is that there have been sort of conflicting reports, all citing, of course, anonymous sources close to various people, about the nature of the breakup. On November 22nd, The Sun did publish a report quoting an anonymous source who is allegedly close to Tayshia, who claimed that Tayshia initiated the breakup because of Zach's, quote, controlling behavior, as well as distance and just not aligning on futures, sort of suggesting that Zach was threatened by Tayshia's success and that they had been fighting about his controlling nature. Again, there are very few specifics given.
Yeah, the only specific, it's like she asked him to work on being controlling, but he continued to be controlling. And
so we don't know what that means, and we also don't know who the source is, which is...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really been very, very little, aside from confirmation that the breakup happened, that can be confirmed. It's a lot of anonymous sources.
Yeah.
And that's what the source, who was the basis for this report, claimed, is that this was essentially Zach's fault. Zach was a bad partner. He was controlling. He was threatened by her success. He really wanted her to move to New York and wouldn't consider moving to California, and was extremely bothered that she was traveling for work. It says, quote, he wasn't secure enough to handle her success. And that they were having terrible fights. And the week before the split was confirmed, they had a really bad fight that was sort of the final straw for Tayshia. And the split was made at that point. And maybe, you know, that's, I'm interested in a sense, like, is this the sort of thing where Tayshia's camp is kind of trying to get a narrative out there? Because in some of these Bachelor breakups, they will like release a joint statement like Katie and Blake did. And they did not do that. Like, nothing that we're hearing about what happened has been them on the record saying, we still have the utmost love and respect for each other, but we have decided to part. It's all these anonymous quotes making conflicting claims. And is that them, their camps trying to like control the message in some way? Or is it just, you know, randos like going haywire? Like, we don't know.
Right.
What's
we
going
actually
on.
Don't know. We don't really have a way to know. Us Weekly had a source, you know, sort of seeming to offer an alternative version to the narrative that Zach was controlling, just that they're a mismatch. They couldn't commit to wedding planning or a future together.
Yeah. And just saying like, oh, they actually still have a lot of love for each other. It was like, essentially, it was an amicable split.
Like, maybe, maybe not. They could have parted ways in a normal way and also not have a lot of love for each other. Like, we just simply don't know. Relationships end. Often people do have conflicting versions of how those ends occurred. And again, if they're not saying anything, it's hard for us to actually know or come to any clear conclusions on our own.
my conclusion is just that if it were really amicable, they would have spoken out jointly in public. I think the fact that they chose not to do that, especially so soon after they were publicly running the marathon together and posting about each other.
It seems likely that it wasn't
friendly.
Friendly. Yeah.
It seems sudden, and it seems it bespeaks acrimony to me that they were not able to like get on the same page to present a shared narrative to the outside world, a united front in their breakup. And that makes me sad more than anything, like that Tayshia had to deal with that while having a kidney infection.
It sounds very rough, regardless of what happened. And it's just sad. It's sad to see people in pain, even people that we don't know. And I want good things for Tayshia.
The last hints of anything informative here that I have are two Instagram posts, two cryptic Instagram posts. Well, so right before the breakup was confirmed, apparently Tayshia liked an Instagram quote card that read, "Finally, I realized that I was never asking for too much. I was just asking for the wrong person." Does that sound like such an amazing quote that you would like it, even if it didn't speak to you about your current situation at that moment? Like, if you were like, I'm happy with Zach.
I'm in a great relationship.
That's a wonderful quote.
That's just a great quote.
It just really makes you think. Maybe. Or was this about Zach? Maybe. Maybe she was just like, that really is a wonderful way of putting words together. I also saw a Reddit post that claimed that Zach's friend posted a quote in his Instagram story saying, quote, "A king with the wrong queen can't protect his kingdom if his biggest threat is inside the castle."
What the fuck does that even mean?
I think that it is about the great and how, like, if your queen is, like, trying to stage
overthrow
a coup
you?
Against you and overthrow you, like, how are you going to wage war on Sweden, you know? It's going to be really difficult.
So maybe if Zach's Catherine the Great is your queen. Is just a huge fan
of the great.
Yeah.
Or maybe
or he's trying to shade Tayshia.
I always love these Reddit posts because I'm like, either his friend is like really, really pissed at Tayshia, or his friend is just living my life, happened to be friends with Zach. And like, suddenly there are Reddit threads that are like, I can't believe Zach's friend is attacking Tayshia.
I know. I'm like, what if Zach's friend is like attacking his own ex?
Yeah. Some people who aren't actually the leads and finalists of the Bachelor franchise shows also have love lives.
Look, ultimately, we don't know. The whole thing is kind of a bummer. And what we do know is that it makes us real sad that Zach loves Dave Portnoy.
That makes me really sad.
That makes me really sad.
All this time I spent thinking of Zach as someone who would not post a supportive comment on Dave Portnoy's Instagram, and to know
that
I was dwelling in ignorance.
The real shattering news of this whole cycle.
This is why whenever you think you like a guy who is on The Bachelorette, just stop and be like, he probably likes Barstool. Like, just think about that for a second.
I know, but I need to live in a state of, you know, suspended disbelief in order to buy into any of these love stories.
Emma, it's called disinvesting in the patriarchy. We have to stop ever thinking that a man might be good.
I know. I try. It's so hard.
And on that note, it's time for us to take a quick break, and we'll be right back for a more, I think, lighthearted and juicy chat about Katie Thurston and 12 Days of Messy. Can you keep up? I
like love it. If you, like the two of us, are just always desperate to bring more coziness into your life, may we suggest Barefoot Dreams, especially now because the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary.
With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket.
I mean, there's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times.
If there's anything I trust more than Oprah's favorite things list, it's 6 of Oprah's favorite things list. I mean, come on. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials.
And their products make perfect gifts, too.
I'm a huge fan of just swaddling myself in a big cozy robe. So I know, Emma, I'm very excited for the Barefoot Dreams robe that is heading my way right now. I was so excited to pick it out, and I'm so excited to try it on. Like, the perfect cozy robe.
I'm so excited, too.
Oh, my God. It's going to change my life, I think.
We'll just be swaddling ourselves in coziness 100% of the time. And I think we can all agree that, like, that is the lifestyle which we deserve and to which we aspire. Thank you, Barefoot Dreams.
For Love to See It with Emma and Claire listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code LTSI15.
Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life. Okay, so you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what comes next.
If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola.
With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake.
Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually even enjoyable.
There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or, you know, from your couch, which is certainly how, if I was planning a wedding, I would definitely want to do it as loungily as possible.
So important.
I also just know myself. I know that planning any kind of event, like even a birthday party, can get very stressful. And so it's been really cool to see friends use Zola. It really seems to make everything a lot less stressful. And as a frequent wedding attender, I love to be able to hop on that Zola registry and just purchase a gift. Easy peasy. I know I've done it. I won't forget. Thank you, Zola.
Yeah, everything's all in the same place. It's perfect. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
And you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week.
Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Just heat and savor the good stuff.
Plus, you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. And you can pause or reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
They're celebrating Earth Day all month long at Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Especially since I've been back from my travels, I've gotten really out of practice with my normal meal prep. And so Factor has been really helping me kind of bridge that gap, know that I have healthy, whole meals in my fridge ready to eat when I need them.
Head to factormeals.com/LTSI50 and use code LTSI50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code LTSI50 at factormeals.com/LTSI50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while, or even not that long, knows that we love Article. I mean, honestly, I'm looking around my home right now. Coffee tables from Article. That lovely chair out on my deck, Article. Our big console, Article. My bed frame, Article. This is an Article household.
It is. And it's, I mean, it was an inspiration to me. We finally got our first Article piece of furniture recently, our new couch. And my husband and I are both constantly just like, how did we live before this couch? This is such an improvement over what we had before. It's so comfortable. It just seems to get more comfortable every day. I mean, it's the couch you dream of.
And the reason that we have both been able to find ideal furniture on Article is because Article believes in delightful design for every home.
And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too.
Their curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs makes furniture shopping simple.
And their team of designers are all about finding that perfect balance between style, quality, and price, because we all want the best of all of those three things united in one piece of furniture, right?
Plus, they're dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and, you know, looks good doing it.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
To claim, visit article.com/LTSI, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/LTSI for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
And we're back, and I am so excited because this is the gossip content that I crave. I was trying to explain this situation to my friend Adina when we were driving back to DC together. And I was trying to explain to her that, like, at the gas station, I needed to text you, Claire, because this person we don't know announced publicly that she was dating someone else that we don't know. And
it's very important.
It's very important.
And then you texted me, Katie, John. And I was like, what? Who? What are you talking about? How do you know my friend John? And then it all came together.
Limited time at the brief moments of stopping because you shouldn't text and drive at the same time.
I respect that you're setting a good example. For those who don't know, 12 Days of Messy takes a little explaining. So let's get into this. On November 12th, after Red, Taylor's version, Taylor Swift's re-release of her classic album Red came out, Katie announced and kicked off that she would be doing an Instagram story, like multi-day event called 12 Days of Messy. And each day assigning one song from Red, Taylor's version, to one of her exes from her season of The Bachelorette. And she talked about this before. She'd like polled followers the day before, I think, asking if she should take this suggestion from a DM that she got that's like, oh, you should label the guys from your season with Red songs. And she was like, should I do this and call it 12 Days of Messy? And on November 12th, that is exactly what happened.
And reminder of the timeline, this was not long after she and Blake broke up, Blake Moynes, who was her pick from her season. They announced their breakup on October 25th.
So like a little more than 2 weeks later. And so naturally, she kicks off day one with Blake Moynes. We are never getting back together. This was just like she just came out guns a-blazing.
Yeah, it was an aggressive move.
They did actually get on the same page and post a joint statement
that was very
loving and kind.
And also asked for privacy.
And asked for privacy. She's like, please, we just ask for privacy and kindness as we navigate this new stage of our lives. And like 14 days later, she's like, anyway, Blake, we're never getting back together. He sucks. Bold. Getting attention. I mean, it's just such a naked grab for attention.
Oh, yeah. This also comes on the heels, and we talked about this in our last gossip episode, on the fact that Katie has been, like, lightly hemorrhaging followers since.
Yeah. After the breakup, she did dip below 1 million followers and has continued to lightly decline. She still has a ton of followers, but that 1 million benchmark, I mean, it's a nice one.
She's now at 966,000. So the decline has been slow but steady.
Yeah. So obviously this piqued people's interest. They were like, oh, we thought you guys had an amicable breakup and things were cool, but this actually seems like a song you would assign to someone who
that you're like
really fucked you over.
Yeah.
You're
gleefully walking away from, like, fuck off, dude. And she tried to clarify very early on, like, just so everyone knows, this is, quote, all in good fun and a celebration of Taylor Swift. And she promised more chaos. Honestly, I didn't really expect there to be that much chaos when she started. I was kind of like, okay, I see what you're doing, Katie. You're sort of low-key trolling, but whatever, live your truth. And I assumed that the big thing would just be us waiting to see her finally. Yeah, what song Greg would get. And we all assumed it would be All Too Well.
Yeah. Most of them obviously are not that chaotic. Most of her relationships were not that fraught. It is perhaps one of the most chaotic things throughout the season, throughout this event, that she would kind of troll her ex like this for a laugh and some attention on Instagram. That, I think, was like a high watermark of chaos that was not matched until the very end of this.
Yeah.
But I think in her vision boarding live event, which will come up again, was the night before this first post. And she talked about
her
it a little bit.
Vision boarding live event. I'm vision sorry. Boarding. That as a phrase just makes me laugh.
I know. Listen.
But yes, we did the research here, people.
Yeah. I read a very comprehensive summary on Reddit.
The good people of Reddit really do not disappoint.
Yes. Thank you. You learned something new for posting that. And so on this vision boarding live, as she is cutting out inspiring phrases and pictures from magazines and gluing them to her vision board, I assume, she said that, you know, the internet fucks with me. I'm going to fuck with the internet. And I just want to say, I don't feel that fucked with. I'm like, sure, like, make chaos. It only gives me fuel. But I do feel like you're kind of fucking with Blake. And, like, what did Blake do to you? Like, if he did something to you, say more. But if not, this kind of seems to go against the spirit of this joint statement you posted.
Yeah, the person that I actually feel bad for in all of this is Blake, who has kind of largely stayed off of...
Yeah, we'll get to Blake.
Yeah, we'll get to him eventually,
later.
But...
Let's get
That's
to day
setting
two.
The stage.
Yeah.
Day two was Andrew.
Andrew S.
And he got run.
Yeah. And she posted a picture of the note that he left for her, you know, which was, you know, if you change your mind or whatever, I'll be waiting. And that's sort of what the song Run is about. It's about, and I think I put the lyrics in
yes.
here. It's about having that kind of agreement that's like, let's just, you know, run away together, that Andrew kind of propositioned to her. Like, there's a chain around your throat, piece of paper where I wrote, I'll wait for you. You know, I think that she's just picking up these
little
superficial
nuggets and themes.
Similarities. Yeah.
Which, honestly, fair enough, because it's hard to figure out a real appropriate song with a deep meaning for each of these relationships, most of which, frankly, were not that deep. I did appreciate day three. I thought that was cheeky. She assigned Aaron Clancy the song.
And James Bonsall. She put him in parentheses. Bonsall
with Girl at Home. Because, you know, they're bromance.
Yeah, you've they got left a girl together. At home and everybody knows it.
That was
so
cute.
They are each other's girl at home, which they weren't during her season, but she's able to play off of their narrative in Paradise. Day four, Thomas.
This was a little bit more chaotic.
Thomas was assigned I Knew You Were Trouble. Becca, Thomas's current girlfriend, former bachelorette Becca Kufrin, reportedly unfollowed Katie after this post. And the bachelorettes, we know, that's a tight-knit sorority, so that's got to sting.
Awkward.
Yeah. In her vision boarding live, she said something about how they all planned all the bachelorettes were going to get together in a year or two. And like, I'm like, who's uninvited now? Is it going to be Katie or Becca?
Yikes.
It's going to be Katie. Yeah, so obviously just a nod to Thomas's villain role on her season. I don't think she knew he was trouble. She knew that he was very handsome and she wanted to marry him until the moment when she decided to send him home. Day five is Mikey P. Holy ground. Get it?
He's religious.
He's very religious.
He's a holy man.
Everywhere that such a holy man is holy ground. Day six is Brendan. Remember Brendan? Brendan Quinn?
Vaguely.
Yeah. So his song was The Last Time, which everyone is just baffled by.
I literally wrote a bunch of question marks on our doc under the bullet point for explanation.
I had to Google Brendan Quinn bachelorette exit to get a reminder of how he left, because I thought that might be the clue. So basically, and it is, the way he left is that he was the last guy left without a one-on-one the week before hometowns. And he was like, why am I even here? Like, she clearly isn't into me. So he went and knocked on her door and asked her why he was still there. And she was like, now that you mention it.
You shouldn't be.
You shouldn't be here. Thanks for bringing yourself to my attention. There's the door. And, you know, The Last Time is about a guy showing up at a woman's door to ask her a question, which is like, can you forgive me in the song? But I actually do think it's just kind of a superficial reference to the fact that he showed up at her door to ask her something.
I agree. Again, I don't think this one was too deep. I mean, literally the first lyrics are find myself at your door, just like all those times before.
Yeah.
The door.
This is the last time I'm asking you this. Put my name at the top of your list or don't and just send me home because clearly there's nothing here. Send me to Bachelor in Paradise Canada to get with Ileana. Day seven, Michael A. I almost do.
This one was kind of juicy too. This piqued my interest. I had been tuning out and then... Claire, I think you texted me the day this one dropped. And you were like, Katie, what are you doing?
I had thought that it might be Justin that got I Almost Do because it's a runner-up song, in a way. It's like so close to doing it. That I feel like that's the kind of the level of reference that we've been getting from these.
But the chorus to this song is, and I just want to tell you, it takes everything in me not to call you. And I wish I could run to you. And I hope you know that every time I don't. I almost do.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
It sort of felt like she was trying to shoot her shot with Michael after he had kind of tried to shoot his shot while she was still with Blake in an Instagram comment while her season was airing.
Yeah, remember that. She posted like a very come hither lingerie model shot and he commented, can't say what I'd like to.
But this time, Michael responded in a very platonic friend vibe way.
He literally said, thanks, friend. So he reposted this on his own Instagram story with the note, thanks, friend. You're an amazing human, and I'm certain you'll find what you've been looking for. I got your back. Stay classy, San Diego, which is where she lives now. That will come up later. I feel like when you call someone a human, it's like a very non-romantic thing to say. to me. It's like, yeah, you're literally a human person.
I see nothing sexual here.
Yeah, I see that we belong to the same species. But, you know, it does kind of sound like she's been holding herself back from calling him. But I think on reflection, and I think the fact that it was day 7 was also a hint here, like she wasn't going to shoot her shot in the middle of this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I think this is just a reference to the fact that she wanted to ask him to stay and she let him go and it was difficult, but she almost asked him to stay. Something like that. He was the person who left before things were really resolved between them. So it makes sense, which I can't say about all of her picks. For example, day 8, Hunter Montgomery, 22.
I was also pretty confused by this one. I saw some people wondering whether it was because, like, does she feel 22 when she's with him because he's in his mid-30s? Or is
Michael's
it about
older
him?
Than him?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Or is he? Yeah. Is it about him seeming 22?
Is it because they had a really childlike time together?
I don't get it. I don't know.
I didn't associate that with their relationship. Like, nothing that I could think of, like, really rang true to me of, like, what I thought about Hunter and Katie together.
I feel like I would have thought that, like, Connor would get 22. Yeah. Or even Justin, because they had such a lighthearted, fun relationship. Hunter, yeah. I wouldn't have guessed. I'm still confused.
She had a couple guys who were a few years younger than her who had a very playful vibe with her, and Hunter, yeah, I don't know. Is it because there was a whole thing about him being shorter than some of the other guys, and 22-year-olds are notoriously not fully grown yet because they're still children waiting for their growth spurt? I don't know. But day 8 was also the day that Katie took to a different social media to get the attention of someone who had not yet responded to her tags on Instagram stories, Taylor Swift herself.
This made me feel so weird.
Oh, God, it was so confusing.
It was so cringe.
So the first thing she tweeted was an article in Us Weekly, Katie Thurston compares Bachelorette exes to Taylor Swift songs. And she added, but can I get at Taylor Swift 13 to help me with my last song, eyes emoji. And then
she followed up, Katie?
She gets more specific. Let me explain. Dear at Taylor Swift 13, I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. Can you help me deliver a message from Taylor to someone from my season? Message in a bottle is all I can do. Standing here hoping it gets to you. Prayer hands emoji, heart emoji, rose emoji.
No response from Taylor.
No response from Taylor. I'm shocked. Shit, listen, this is really Katie shooting her shot. This is the part of 12 Days of Messy where Katie is truly, truly shooting her shot, and it doesn't go well. It's not clear what the request is, but whatever she wanted from Taylor, she regroups, she gets through 12 Days of Messy without Taylor's assistance, and here we all are today. Day 9 is Connor. And he is assigned Starlight, which is a song about... Okay, so it was written when she was dating Connor Kennedy, who was the grandchild, I believe, of Ethel and Robert F. Kennedy. And she dedicated the song Starlight to Ethel in her liner notes. Ethel famously was very fond of Taylor when they were dating... when she was dating Connor and buying a mansion next door to his family's mansion in Hyannisport. So now I'm thinking maybe it's just because his name is Connor and the song is sort of about a Connor adjacent person.
Yeah. By this point, I feel like she was just like had her eyes on the prize at the end. It was just like, gotta get through.
Gotta get to the end. It is about, you know, two young kids like listening to music and dancing and best night ever, and they were dancing like they were made of starlight, and he does love musical theater, so hey. Connor posted his own theory, which was, quote, the whole place was dressed to the nines, That's a song. That's a line from the song Starlight. Because cats have nine lives, right? Katie Thurston, you're a genius. Is that what Katie meant?
Who knows? I think Connor was just honored to be included.
just happy to be here.
Yeah, just happy to be here.
Connor, of course, famously entered dressed as a cat.
And that brings us to day 10 and Justin Glaze, her runner-up, who did not get the screen time he deserved. And she gave him the song Sad, Beautiful, Tragic.
Which, again, it just feels like we didn't have enough to go on, and the song doesn't feel, like, considered, like, it doesn't, like, seem to give me enough. Like, Justin's always getting sold short here. But I'm going to guess it's something about the line, for example, words, how little they mean when you're a little too late. Because I think her thing when he left was, like, my feelings with you just aren't far enough along, which is often how you let people go toward the end.
Yeah. Again, I don't know how much thought was put into this.
They had a beautiful, tragic, magic love affair. And if you don't know that about Katie and Justin, you don't know anything. So this brings us almost to the end. The final 2 days are dedicated to one man, and neither of them, neither Greg nor Trey, but notably Greg.
Most notably
Greg. Are that final man. Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like Greg was probably just fucking relieved.
Yeah, I think so. I think he probably was very, 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 very relieved. I think a lot of us assumed that Greg was going to get All Too Well. I thought maybe it would be the last one.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be the second to last or the last one. And if she didn't want to give him the last one, that maybe the last day would be about herself. We weren't sure. I do want to call out the fact that before it got to the end, Andrew, Mikey, Greg, and Justin did a joint Instagram Live. Like, the four of them and also Trey and sometimes Michael seem to be on really good terms. They're close. And so they were doing a live, and I guess Andrew put the question to the group. I think perhaps someone had asked it in the comments. And he was like, what does everyone think of the 12 days of Messy? And no one says anything except Mikey seems genuinely confused and multiple times says, wait, like, what is it? And then all of them start laughing. And then he realizes.
Except for Greg. Greg never
Greg
reacts.
Has zero reaction.
Greg keeps his face completely still.
Yeah. Greg knows. He's like, I'm not giving them anything. Like, there will be a headline.
Yeah, I was looking at a Reddit post about it, and all the comments are people dissecting the twitches of his eyebrows.
I was like, I just think he's trying to not chat about it. And frankly, none of them are really trying to chat about it. It's pretty funny. I found it pretty entertaining. Yeah.
They're all just like, let's go.
Let's get out of here. And the only thing Greg says is,
bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Or something. Yeah. But Justin says, as he signs off, Messy Drew, and gives a little classic Justin reaction face. I miss Justin's expressions.
Me too. It was great.
That face is made for TV. He should be on our TV more.
I agree. I really hope that he is on Paradise next year.
I want to say that I want to speak to Greg being left out. I don't know, actually, if she knew at the beginning of this that Greg wouldn't be in there. I think it's likely that she had a song for Greg and then things evolved in a different direction and she pivoted. I think a lot of people love that she gave him no song, that it's like the ultimate shade. It's so petty just to not give him that importance. And I get that. That makes a lot of sense. However, that's not what Red is. Like, Red is not an album about, like, you don't even deserve my time or attention. It's about having this, like, toxic relationship with a terrible guy who treats you like garbage and then just letting yourself write a whole huge goddamn messy dramatic album about it and not being like, I'm not gonna give him another moment of my time. Like, no, give him that time. That's what's messy about it. I feel like it's not a full embrace of the spirit of Red if you're not going
to
be petty in song.
I have to agree. And I also have to agree with your thesis that perhaps when she started, she thought she would include Greg in some capacity.
Yeah.
We don't know. But that does bring us to the big news, which was days 11 and 12. On day 11, which I think a lot of people had thought might be Greg.
Yeah, and then allow her to end on a more positive note.
Yeah. She instead didn't post a name and posted the song State of Grace with a video of maybe her, presumably, walking through some very tall grass to a beach. And people just lost their minds with speculation. There were a bunch of guesses. People were like, wait, is she going to give Greg 2 days? That seems crazy. Like, I think that's where we sort of were like, yeah, this probably isn't about Greg at all. And she's probably leaving him out because we didn't think that she would give him 2 days.
Yeah.
Some people were still wondering, is day 12 going to be about dating herself, about like renewing herself as a single woman? Or was she dating John?
I was so shocked when I started to see those comments because I was like, where the fuck did that come from? Like, she's been friends with John this whole time. Suddenly you all think they're dating. I was like, what's going on? But I should have trusted those internet commenters. They're paying attention where I am not.
Yeah, I feel like I had seen little inklings. When it first started, I was like, oh yeah, I totally get why people are speculating that. But like, no, they're just friends.
Let them be friends. Let men and women be friends, guys. They can be platonic friends. It doesn't have to be anything more.
But we were wrong.
We were wrong.
When she posted this, I will admit, I did start to believe it. I was like, oh my God, maybe she is dating John. Given that she had put out the request that she wanted to deliver a message to someone from her season.
That was a
huge tell.
That was the huge hint. And because she had already reached back out in song to all of the guys that you would otherwise think it might be, like Michael, Justin, Andrew, they'd all been included already. Like, she's not going to make some sort of overture to Greg, like, let's get back together. So like, it's gotta be someone she's still on really good terms with. Who's left except for John, like, that could potentially be a romantic interest for her? So like, that was through the process of elimination. I was like, it makes sense. And she clearly has a message that is more of a romantic overture than the one she posted to Michael left. So what I was missing, because I didn't watch Katie's long 2-hour vision boarding live event, because the thought of spending 2 hours watching someone else vision board makes me
want to
change careers at least. Like, it's not worth it to me. But apparently during this live, John was in the comments and he started asking everyone to tell Katie to go to the door. And she gets the message from everyone and gets up and goes to the door and apparently came back very emotional, nearly in tears, according to the Reddit summary I read, and then told a story about how John, quote, told her she could safely put her wine glasses in the dishwasher, but one of her glasses ended up breaking. And so John had bought her a new wine glass to replace it. And the Reddit description. Again, this is from You Learn Something New on Reddit. Described Katie as having a huge giddy smile on her face and then ended the live event. So I can see why, if you're watching that, you're like, oh, this is not how you react to your friend replacing a broken glass.
Just like sending one wine glass.
It sounds like, I should have watched it, but I just found this right before before we taped, but it sounds like maybe he brought it to her door because she ended the show right after that. But either way, it's not the reaction you have to your friend being like, sorry about your wine glass, like, here's a new wine glass. That's a reaction that you have.
Yeah, I was like, as someone who has had a friend break one of my cocktail glasses and then send me a new one. Very
and you
sweet
were nearly
and appreciated,
in tears,
but
and
yeah, yeah, I did break down into tears on an Instagram live and then confess my love to that friend. So that's awkward, yeah. But yeah,
it's nice to know how you and Adam got together. Yeah, so that does seem like a huge tell. If I were watching that, I would also be like, she's going to announce that she and John are together or that she's into him and like publicly ask him out. This brings us to day 12, which confirms that John Hersey is her new love interest. The song is Begin Again, of course. I think that we always knew that it was going to end with Begin Again because she has to begin again after, you know, everything she's been through.
But people weren't sure if it was going to be Begin Again and it was going to be like her as a fabulous single woman.
Yeah. But no, it turns out that she and John are dating, although it wasn't completely clear. She posted essentially a very long video clip. I actually don't know how this was technically speaking possible according to Instagram's limitations. It was like a full minute long Instagram story slide. But it was a long video montage. It included his full limo exit moment, their conversation where, you know, he's like, I thought I would snap out of it when I got out of the limo, but like, I haven't snapped out of it. And then she's like, that's my type. Like,
oh,
that's
did
my
he hear
type
me?
Right there. Oh. Oh, no. Did he hear me? She also
included a clip from a plane ride with John. That
he's sort of flying through the sun, like it's a sun-dappled shot, and John is turning around from the cockpit of the tiny plane, smiling at her.
Eagle-eyed viewers, commenters, pointed out that this was a plane ride Blake was also on.
Yeah, it was filmed with Blake next to her while she and Blake were engaged.
Which, like,
the mess.
Weird. Maybe, maybe just use a different video clip. And it concludes with her highlighting some specific lyrics of Begin Again. I've been spending the last 8 months thinking all love ever does is break and burn and end. But on a Wednesday in a cafe, I watched it begin again. And then it ended with like day 12, John Hersey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was clear that they were probably dating. At the very least, she wanted to date him. And then a couple hours later.
Yeah, it seemed almost like maybe they weren't because he didn't publicly respond like for a while. And people were like, so are they dating? Or like, is she asking him out? Why is he not saying anything?
But then he did end up posting a TikTok that he also posted on his Instagram account of the two of them like hugging and kissing and
Holding hands
and it
piggyback ride.
I have so many questions about who filmed this.
It's truly a TikTok that's like, look at us doing non-friend things that romantical type friends do.
They're literally making out. I'm like, who, like on the street, like who is filming this? And it's all in the same outfit. So this was all taken during one night.
Imagine like getting your friend being like, can you like, we're trying to like go public with our relationship. Can you just like,
follow us around for a couple hours.
I'm going to stand here. Like, Katie's going to walk toward me, and then I'm going to lean down and make out with her. Can you just, like, capture that?
But then also we're going to walk off, and if you could, like, do it in a very artsy way in which, like, Katie's – it looks like it's almost documentary style, and Katie's laughing and hugging me and then turns back and looks gleeful. Like, it was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And he captioned it, I really like it here. And she responded, me too. They also confirmed to Us Weekly that day that they were now a couple. And it was so funny. Actually, the article was like, the couple will attend their mutual friend, like Dr. Lovegrove's Noel Ball on December 2nd. And I was like, this truly sounds like a like Victorian engagement
Hallmark
announcement. It's like the newly affianced couple will make their first public appearance together at the ball.
Yeah, I'm like, it's historical fiction or it's like a really bad Hallmark Christmas movie.
Can you imagine being like, oh yeah, I've been dating this guy and we're gonna make our first public appearance as a couple together like at our friend's ball next week?
It's the most Hallmark movie shit ever. Also, it feels like their friend Steven Love Grove or whatever, mm-hmm. was like formative to this relationship. Like I immediately he gave a quote to Us Weekly
that was like, gosh, it's just so great that my two friends are now a couple. It was just a very, I've never like seen anything like it, like this confirmation.
It was a lot. Yeah,
it's so they're together. We're very happy for them. I think John seems very sweet. He's always been very protective of Katie. He was sent home week two, but when she was involved in that sort of public conflict with Greg, he really wrote a very like passionate defense of her.
Yeah. I think they actually became good friends because Reality Steve had incorrectly reported that he was in the final four. And so those internet rumors, which she sort of nods to, had like made them.
Right. She wrote a post that was like internet rumors led me to this guy.
Yeah.
But so what's weird is that I don't actually. Okay. Because I also read an explanation of how they became friends, which is basically like that she had moved to San Diego and he lived there and they serendipitously happened to be at the same beach. And like he saw a photo she'd posted and was like, oh, I was right there. It was confusing. It seemed like there were a certain number of sort of like coincidental moments and they ended up connecting and becoming close friends while her season was airing.
Yeah, it was while her season was airing. Basically, Bachelor Data posted a really good timeline of this.
Oh, thank you, Bachelor Data.
That, yeah, Katie's season wrapped late April. It premiered June 2021. And 1 week later in June, and this is before Katie moved to San Diego, Katie's friend was spotted with John. Then on July 17th, that's when she started browsing for apartments in San Diego. The next day, Katie and John are together on Stephen Lovegrove's Instagram. And the day after that, Katie posted her first picture of John saying, slide into his DMs. He's single and ready to mingle. And then the 28th, she officially shared she's moving to San Diego. Her season ended August 9th. She was, you know, obviously with Blake through August. And at the end of August, Katie and John joked about the final four spoiler rumor. And on September 1st is when Katie tagged both Blake and John. John, Blake, and Katie also hung out in mid-September.
Yeah, the three of them had hung, like, he was a very close friend of hers, and so they had hung out with Blake together.
Yeah, this is intertwined with her visiting San Diego, moving to San Diego, the fact that there were rumors about him, it all sort of came together, it seems.
Yeah.
For them to make them become friends. And he was very much her friend during her relationship with Blake, and Blake had hung out with them. That's what we
honestly
know.
I respect that Blake did not feel threatened at all by this, like, and it makes sense, you know, in a way. Like, I have platonic male friends, and I think it's healthy to have friends of all genders and orientations, but she did say that he was really her type, exactly her type, and I don't know, I'm a little nervous.
I think it's very rough, and this
it's rough
honestly leads us into the Blake of it all.
Blake did not know this was coming. He unfollowed her when this was posted, and he continued to follow her after she posted, we are never, ever, ever getting back together about him. They were still on good terms. He had given a long interview to the Talking It Out podcast with Brian Abasolo and Mike Johnson, and was very respectful of Katie in it and defended her and was like, I wouldn't handle it the way she's handling the breakup, but it's just she's being funny with it. That's
like,
how
that's
she's coping.
Her sense of humor. That's
right.
How
she's
she
not attacking
copes.
Me. It's fine. But when he saw this announcement, he did unfollow her. And
fair enough.
clear that he did not get a heads up. And
he confirms that he did not get a heads up because basically before the original interview that he had given with to Brian and Mike came out, this news broke. And so the last half hour of the episode is sort of a follow-up interview that they did with Blake right after this news hit. And it's very raw, and he clearly had just found out. And so we do get some pretty interesting insights into kind of how this all
The tonal unfolded. Shift is really stark. Like,
it's very stark.
He's clearly not happy about the breakup per se. Like, it's always tough. But in the first part of it, he seems at peace with it. He's like, we weren't a good match. Katie's right. Like, we can both learn from, you know, what we went through together. And I don't regret proposing to her. Like,
I remember how happy I was in the moment. Yeah. And I don't want to live with regrets. And, you know, I can still remember how happy I felt in that moment. So I don't regret doing it.
And then in the second part, he sounds like audibly distressed. Like, he sounds very sad. He sounds hurt. At times, he sounds close to tears.
His voice is breaking in it. Like, I honestly found it so heartbreaking to listen to. And to Blake's credit, like, he is so respectful and I think very generous to Katie throughout even both parts of the interview. You know, this is clearly a person that, like, and they clearly, their initial breakup was hard but largely amicable. Like, they mutually agreed that this wasn't a good fit. It sort of seems like maybe Blake was willing to fight for it for a little longer, and Katie sort of drew a line, and then he came around to her position. But, like, on the whole, they both seem to have concluded that this wasn't a great fit, which is a very, again, normal thing.
From what he says and from some more oblique comments that Katie made on the vision boarding live, it sounds like a big factor was that he's very independent. He spends a lot of time traveling, doing his conservation work, and Katie wanted a much more involved and present partner, and it was hard for him to build that into his mindset and his lifestyle. He wasn't good maybe at always texting enough, giving her the attention that she needed in their relationship, and she felt neglected.
And that's a fair thing, and I think Blake,
and I think he's very understanding of
that. He's understanding of that and seems to, like, I did find it interesting and positive that he really was conscious of not trying to shift blame onto either of them, but talking about how, there are things he can learn about being a better partner from this relationship. And he says, you know, we have really different ways of expressing love, different love languages, as it were. It seems like Katie is a words of affirmation person, which I relate to because I am as well. And I think that, you know, it's totally possible to have a partnership with someone who isn't. Like, my boyfriend very much is not. But if the person is not physically present and also isn't giving you those words of affirmation, if that's how you receive love, I would imagine that could be difficult.
I'm sure it was. And, like, one of the things he even said was almost like, maybe I just need to choose someone next time who is more similar to me in that way, that, like, and that's also a valid thing to learn from.
Totally.
Both how you can do better and also how you can find someone who's more compatible. But, you know, that's all fine. He doesn't seem to have anger about the breakup, but to find out that, like, less than a month after this breakup that for you was painful and
that you're still in the process of healing
that
from
she
processing.
Has planned an extended multi-day public Instagram event to announce that she is now in a relationship with a guy that you thought, perhaps accurately, but now understandable that you would question that you thought was her very platonic friend.
And that you hung out with multiple times with her.
It's got to be uncomfortable. It's got to make you question. Like, I think it would be illogical not to look back and be like, was there something there between them that I didn't know? Did I miss something?
He even says you know, kind of shifts the blame to himself and wonders, like, did I do something? Did I not show up for Katie in a way that made her seek the things I couldn't give her out in John, who was physically there?
I mean, to if you're dating someone, if you're engaged to someone who has a lifestyle that has them traveling far away from you a lot, lives in a different city, et cetera, and they end up wanting to get with their best friend who is around them all the time, it's clear that Katie wants a very present partner, and that is completely valid. And I can imagine that having a very handsome, attentive best friend who is around all the time while your fiance is in Africa not answering your texts.
Yeah, and also
it's appealing.
Right, and it makes sense to me also that John is someone that wouldn't have necessarily popped on camera or, like, made an impression in the world of the show.
She said that it felt like he was interviewing when they had their one-on-one time, and that's why he didn't even make it past the second rose ceremony. It was just very stilted, and when they got to know each other off camera, obviously
very different.
That camera awareness is different. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we saw that with Peter and Kelly. Also. Yeah. So like that all makes sense to me. The big thing that really like upset me on Blake's behalf about all of this is the fact that there was, according to him, she did not bother to give him any kind of heads up about what was coming.
That really bothers me.
It really
bothers
me. Unkind. It's really unkind. It's really unkind, frankly. And it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
I think it's unkind. I think that's a fair. Yeah.
It really, like, the unkindness almost to me is in how oblivious it seems. It's like, how could you not, like, even think of me when you're doing this? We just broke up. Like, how could you not consider that I'm going to see this and it's going to be.
And not even that he's hurtful. Going to see it, but that he's literally going to be very much implicated in what will inevitably become a major news story within reality TV and entertainment media. Like, there's an added layer. I think even any of us lay people, it would be good form to perhaps give a very, very, very recent ex a heads up that you're going to be, like,
dating
a mutual friend, right? Like, that would just public. That's just the kind thing to do, but it's especially kind of incumbent on you to do that when you are all public figures, and this is inevitably going to demand public comment from your ex.
Yeah This is going to involve him, like, and
that's like really what he expresses a lot of upset with in his interview with Mike and Brian.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't sign on for 12 Days of Messy like none of the guys did, but were implicated in it anyway. And, like, I just want to very much not be attached anymore. I want to be able to, like, focus on what I do and my conservation work and not have to answer questions about Katie and John and not be associated with this anymore.
And he tried, you know, again, he's fair. He's pretty gracious about it.
He wishes them the best.
Wishes them the best. I mean, honestly, I think he could have. I would have allowed him a lot more latitude to be far pettier and angrier than he
was. Honestly, me too. Like, I can't. I mean, I don't want to do, like, oh, everything is just gender flip it and see if it's fair. But, like, the thought of Peter handling one of his post-show breakups and reunions this way, like, by orchestrating his own, like, off-camera elaborate stunt, like, just first Instagram story views, I feel like he would have been totally vilified. And I think that it's fair to be critical.
Yeah, and to be clear, like, there is no criticism here of Katie dating John. Frankly, it's probably a better match for her. They seem really happy. He seems great. I hope they are happy. As we said up top, like, we tend to get on board with couples. We want people to be happy and thrive and, like, and have good, healthy relationships with partners that are present. It just sucks to see someone sort of rub their newfound happiness almost in the face of an ex without even giving them the respect. Like, I actually think it's a matter of respect to be like, you mattered enough to me that I want you to know what's coming, and I want to give you some space to process this, even if it was 20 minutes, some space to process this before the public is involved.
I'm not going to agree between us to present a public face asking for privacy, and then less than 2 weeks later begin soliciting attention around our relationship, and then culminate it by announcing my new relationship with a timeline that looks to a lot of people, fairly or not, a little bit suspicious about whether it overlapped with our relationship. Like, it's really soliciting, as Blake points out, the kind of attention that he thought they had both asked not to get around their breakup. Right. And I think that it just shows some, like, super terminal main character syndrome. Like, it's like Katie is really putting herself right now in the mindset of, this is my rom-com. And, like,
and everyone that I was with before this was, like, a stepping stone to my happy ending.
It's like Blake is, like, the bad boyfriend. But in a rom-com, that bad boyfriend isn't real. He's not a real person to have his feelings hurt. And often he's deliberately made into kind of a real shithead so that no one feels bad anyway. Like, the audience doesn't want to sit there while you're being happy in public at the end of your rom-com being like, oh, but you treated your nice boyfriend so
badly. That is honestly why I have a really hard time with rom-coms like Sweet Home Alabama, where the other guy seems really nice and appealing. Like, it is not satisfying.
Right. In real life, you would look at fucking Reese Witherspoon's character in Sweet Home Alabama and be like, what is wrong with her? Like, what an awful thing to do to her fiance. And we live in real life. We don't live in a rom-com. So, like, for Katie to produce with John this little video of them kissing to announce their relationship and to use footage from a time that she was with him and her then fiance at the same time. And then she posted a tweet the same day with a picture of, like, a fridge magnet shaped like a film clapperboard that says, life is a movie, direct it well. And it is holding up a black and white photo of John with her dog, Tommy. And the tweet says, producing my own happiness. And I'm like, she wants her never been kissed ending. She wants to, like, have this big public romantic moment that's like, I've fallen in love with the person I shouldn't have, but it's so real and exciting. You have to get on board. And there's just more, there's more mess involved in real life. There are real people's feelings involved. And to act like you're just the main character and never been kissed without considering that you have a real, very recent ex-fiance who is going to have his own emotions about being dragged into this, it's just so oblivious and self-centered to me. Just the bare minimum he could expect is a heads up. Like, they're linked together in public by virtue of having gotten engaged on the show, and that ended so recently. They released a joint statement together, so she knows that they are publicly managing their images in some way together through this breakup, and this completely flouts that. And Blake, I've never really been a fan of Blake. I don't like it. I don't like his whole, like, shtick very much as a viewer. I never connected with him that much. I was a little skeptical of why he came on the show for Katie. But, like, the way that I for the first time, like, listening to this podcast, I really did kind of feel convinced that he had real hopes for things working out with Katie that were
This was actually the most I've ever connected with him.
Oh, same. And that's not to say that Blake is now my favorite, but he is a person. And
no, he's Katie a person who deserves respect. I would say the same thing about Katie. She's also a person who deserves respect, right?
Like, yeah, and if Blake did anything super horrible to her, he should not have done that. But all I can respond to is what I have seen.
By both of their accounts, neither of them did anything
super terrible.
Super terrible. But, of course, there was a big reaction to this announcement. And a lot of that reaction was quite negative. And John, again, I get why he was probably feeling defensive or upset seeing some of the conversation.
Not the first time he's felt defensive or upset about conversation regarding Katie and one of the men from her season.
Tis true. And so he decided that the best way to deal with this was to write a lengthy open letter to Reddit.
To Reddit. Do not engage John. With Reddit, John. They're even meaner than us.
We should know.
Yeah. So John wrote this letter to sort of give his perspective about what happened and to defend Katie against speculation that she cheated on Blake with him. He says, quote, "There was no wrongdoing prior to the end of the engagement," which I assume is just a little redundancy, but it does make it sound like there was wrongdoing after the end of the engagement. But yes, that he says we never, you know, put a foot out of line. He also basically says, "I never had even the faintest thought of her. She was engaged. Neither of us is the kind of person who would ever, ever think of each other romantically in that context."
That is very, like, he doth protest too much to me.
It just seems so
that's not real.
It's very unlikely. Like, it's possible, but to me, it's okay if you had a crush on Katie while she was engaged.
Right,
it's human.
Exactly.
It's
like,
okay.
You didn't cross a line. Like, you didn't cross a line. Neither of you did. Like, that's very human. That's why I say it's a little bit too much. Like,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to feel, I actually am starting to feel something for John that maybe is what I should feel for Blake, and Blake and I are still together. That's human. That's how shit works. But he doesn't want to allow any room that it's like she broke up with Blake October 25th. She and I suddenly started to fall passionately, madly in love. And here we are today. And he also says, quote, "To those of you who suggest that we should have waited, I understand. I hear you. But try to understand what it's like for me, a regular guy, falling helplessly for his best friend, not being able to take her out for dinner because photos would likely leak and everyone would assume we were trying to foster some sort of secret and scandalous relationship. Ha ha. Our decision to come out publicly was a decision to pursue happiness in the way we wanted." And he does say disagreeing with someone for how they decide to go about it is okay. I do, John. I do disagree in how you guys decide to go about
it.
But
also, I'm like, clearly you don't think it's okay because you wrote a whole letter.
And he's like, just because everyone's saying that we cheated. But
sure.
Clearly, a lot of people just don't like the way that you went about it. However, I also just want to note that everyone knew they were close friends. So, like, they could have done a lot of stuff in public without raising suspicion.
And, like, yeah, maybe there would have been chatter, but as long as you didn't make out in public.
Yeah, but, like, okay, so they wanted to be able to make out in public.
Also, that's fair.
This was a very bad way to achieve the goal of dating in public without drama. It was a great way to achieve the goal of getting Katie a lot of attention.
And you have to know that when you court that level of attention, that people are assholes on the internet.
That's the thing.
Like, it's not a surprise.
I get it. She's an influencer. She's a public figure. Getting attention is part of her job. I don't think this was a very artful way of doing it, but she's allowed to need attention to try to get it.
And to be clear, she's also allowed to want that and publicly state that it's not okay to, like, be deluged with harassment. Like, I support her right to seek attention without receiving harassment. And people always cross the line.
Yes.
You know, however.
That's true. However, caveats aside, he writes about how weird and unpleasant it was to have to worry about optics while he was falling in love with his best friend and, like, something that's so personal. And I get that. It must be so weird. And it's part of the conflict that drives the excitement of a rom-com is, like, they're in love, but maybe they shouldn't be, or there's an obstacle, and there's a romance in watching a couple overcome exactly this kind of obstacle. But this was handled in a very bad way. If what you want is to avoid negative optics. And I think that, like, the idea of announcing a relationship in a way that's, like, engineered to elicit a lot of attention and public investment and scrutiny, to then say, oh, I don't want this attention. I hate this attention. I hate that you have opinions about us. Well, you asked us to have opinions, or your girlfriend did. Like, you tried to grab our eyeballs and you tried to get us invested in this because that's how Katie makes money. And, like, that's her job and that's okay. But that does, people don't just exist to give you positive attention.
Right.
Some people are going to have critical opinions about how you did it. And you called them all over. You're like, boy, do I have something for you. It's just so uncomfortable.
It's also worth noting that John is perhaps the real winner in all of this because his Instagram following like more than doubled.
Yeah. And I hope that they go on from this to have a very happy and solid relationship and
me too.
Find professional and romantic paths forward that make them happy. And I hope that Blake is allowed to be decoupled from this whole narrative.
Oh my God. Yeah. His biggest plea, like he's like on the verge of tears and he's just basically saying, I want to not be associated with this. I want to never go on
apologies
on a Bachelor show again.
Apologies to him for including him in this recap, but we will not be talking about Blake anymore unless he goes back on his word and goes on Paradise. And yeah, so what a ride this was.
Wild. And it's like, I hated it, but I also loved it. So I'm part of the problem here.
I mean, truly, there's something about Katie and this really encapsulated it, where I'm just like, do I love that you're really good at making chaotic content that is fun to exclaim over with Emma, or do I resent that it's so obvious that you're manufacturing dramatic content? Like, it's so clear what she's doing in a way that unsettles, but it's, you know, I'm still talking about it, still had fun, still a good hour and a half.
So I guess like what we're saying is thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. thanks for what you did. And, you know, best wishes to everyone that we talked about today. And to all of you, our listeners, thanks for joining us. We will be back with more gossip probably before too long. Let's see what happens.
And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Tamika Weatherspoon. Our theme music is by Tamar Habib, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like the show, please rate us 5 stars, follow us, leave a review, and of course, help us spread the word about our show, especially to all of your friends who used to listen to us as Here to Make Friends.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com with your questions and voice memos. We might even feature you in an upcoming mailbag.
You can also find us on Twitter at Love to See It Pod and Instagram at clareandemmapod. And you can find our newsletter, which makes a great holiday gift if you want to give someone a subscription, on Substack at clareandemma.substack.com.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose. We'll be back next week for Men Tell All. Can you keep up? I like love it.
Stitcher.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit betterhelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/love to see it.